कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम। Begin the fourth chapter. Vyasa Vuvacha Iti Bruvanam Samstuya Muninam Dirga Satrinam वृद्धकुलपतिसूतं बह्वृच शौनको ब्रवीत।
ऑन हियरिंग सुत गोस्वामी स्पीक दस शौनक ऋषि शौनक मुनि हू वॉज द एल्डरली लर्नेड लीडर ऑफ ऑल द ऋषिज एंगेज इन द प्रोलॉन्ग सैक्रिफिशियल सेरेमनी कॉन्ग्रेचुलेटेड सुत गोस्वामी बाय एड्रेसिंग हिम एज फॉलोज।
So here we see that the first six questions have been answered by the third chapter, till the third chapter. Now the sages of Naimisharanya, they are going to ask another set of questions in this chapter. So it is described that the sages of Naimisharanya, they had chosen Shaunaka Rishi as their speaker, as their spokesperson. And then Shaunaka Rishi would ask the questions on behalf of the sages to Suta Goswami. So in this chapter, Vishnu Chakratipad says that the excellence of the speaker and the hearer of the Bhagavatam is described. And also the mercy that Vyasdev received, that is also described. The mercy received by Vyasdev from Narada Muni, that will essentially come in the next chapter, but the events leading to that. This is a very important purport. So this verse describes why did the sages of Naimisharanya choose Shaunaka Rishi as the spokesperson. What is the speciality of him? Like, what were the qualifications of Shaunaka Rishi which made them choose him? There are three qualifications explained. Muninam Dirga Satrinam means the sages who assembled there for performing a long sacrifice. So among all the sages who assembled there for performing a prolonged sacrifice, Shaunaka Rishi was the Vridha, he was the eldest. Was the eldest by age. The second qualification is Kulapati. Kulapati means he was also superior by the family lineage. And the third qualification is Bahvrucha. What is the word-to-word translation of Bahvrucha? Learned, yeah. Bahvrucha means basically, like, he was superior to all the sages by his knowledge, by his learning. So these are the three qualifications. Like, he was the eldest by age, by birth also he was superior, and by he was born in a superior family, and especially he was also superior by knowledge. Of course, among the three, the most important qualification is he was superior by knowledge. So therefore, he was chosen, but the other qualifications were also there. Just like, for example, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the story of Indra offending Brihaspati, sixth canto, seventh chapter. So after the demigods offend Brihaspati, then when they lose all their opulences, so they were defeated by the demons, and then they go to Lord Brahma. and they ask Lord Brahma about how they can regain their position. That time Lord Brahma tells the demigods that you go to Vishwaroop. He is a very highly qualified Brahmana, and please ask him to become the priest and perform sacrifice through him. And with the help of him, if you serve him properly, with the help of him, you will regain all the opulences. The demigods go to Vishwaroop. So you see, the demigods are in the position of the father to Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop is like their nephew, the position of their sons. So making to accept somebody as a priest, that means that you are making him in the position of a guru. You are putting him in the superior position. So that time when demigods go to Vishwaroop, Vishwaroop was very reluctant. But then demigods mention that although you may be inferior to us by age, you are in the position of a son, but because you are more qualified, you are actually highly qualified in knowledge and tapasya. And according to the Shastric injunctions, that in regards to obtaining knowledge, one need not consider the age of a person, whether he is actually elder or younger. So because you are highly learned, although you are actually younger to us, you are in the position of the sons, but still we want to accept you as the spiritual master and get knowledge from you. So in regards to knowledge, that is why, in fact, the whole Bhagavatam is all the eldest of all the sages, they chose to hear from Shukadev Goswami. So these three qualifications are mentioned, but out of the most important qualification is Shaunaka Rishi is superior by knowledge also. So Prabhupada also mentions these qualifications. He is the leader of the house, he is an elderly man, and he must be very vastly learned. The qualifications of the congratulator, Prabhupada mentions these qualifications. So here, this purport is an important purport in which Prabhupada actually gives a definition of what is realization. He says that there are 6 points in this. He mentions that what is not realization, or in the sense what is not and what is, he mentions both these points. First of all, he mentions that what is not, realization does not mean that out of vanity, attempting to show one's own learning by trying to surpass Acharya. So sometimes a person, in order to tell something which nobody else has told, in order to tell something unique, he tells something which has never been told by the previous Acharyas. So he says that realization does not mean that just to show one superiority, trying to surpass the previous Acharyas, a person tries to show one's own learning. And another point he says that, in regards to what is not, he says that no obscure meaning should be screwed. Of course, we'll tell the next point he says is that one must have full confidence in the previous Acharya. One should have full faith in the previous Acharya. At the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for particular circumstances in a suitable manner. So this is a very important point, that according to the time, place and circumstance, in an easily understandable manner, one should actually speak the subject matter. Realization does not mean that, it does not mean some parrot-like repetition, but should want it present in such a manner that people can easily understand it. It should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. At the same time, maintaining the original purpose of the text. And one should not bring out some obscure meaning. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, and yet should be presented in an interesting manner. So essentially we can say, like when we talk about responsible preaching, there are two important points: loyalty to the parampara and sensitivity to the audience. So Prabhupada is mentioning both these points here, that one should have faith in the previous acharya, loyalty to the parampara, the original text, the original meaning of the text must be, original purpose of the text must be maintained. All these points refers to loyalty. At the same time, sensitivity to the audience. One should present in an interesting manner, in a way audience can understand. So, you see, the preacher is like the link between tradition and audience. So he has a great responsibility of maintaining the loyalty and also presenting in an understandable manner, being sensitive to the audience. So this is a very important principle in preaching. And you see that especially in a modern setting, like one is always actually caught up between like two particular principles, that how much I should stick to the tradition, at the same time how much I should adapt to my surroundings. How much you should stick to the tradition, how much you should actually adapt to the present scenario, present audience. So in order to meet this challenge, we have to find a balance between fidelity and flexibility. Fidelity means, again, it is something like loyalty. We have to find a balance between loyalty and flexibility to the surroundings. Fidelity and flexibility. So in order to connect with the tradition, we have to connect with the tradition through fidelity or loyalty. We have to be faithful to the principles taught by the previous acharya. At the same time, we have to connect with our surroundings through sensitivity to flexibility. How do we make that fine balance? For that, of course, we have to observe the example of advanced devotees. In what principles they don't compromise, what are the details which they actually adjust. How they are actually following these two principles, loyalty and sensitivity. And how do the advanced devotees, how do they discover the balance between fidelity and flexibility, or loyalty and sensitivity? How do they discover? That is by their sincere practice of devotional service. Tesham sadasa yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam enamam upayantite. So when a person is sincerely engaged in devotional service, sadasa yuktanam, constantly with a desire to please Krishna, then Krishna gives the intelligence as to how to balance between loyalty and sensitivity, fidelity and flexibility. So this is a important thing which Prabhupada is mentioning here. And then he says that the symptom of the learned man, he will not hear from one who does not represent the acharya. So this is symptom of a learned man. He will not hear from, that means what does it mean essentially? That a learned person will not be following a personality cult. He will basically hear from a person who represents the truth. You understand what is a personality cult? Personality cult means that somebody is very charismatic, he speaks very eloquently, or somebody, his mannerisms are good, or he is very beautiful, or he, like, by the external considerations we become attracted to him. Even though he may be actually, he may not be representing the parampara properly. That is what a personality cult is. Personality cult means you are attached to the person, but you are not concerned about what he represents, whether he is representing the parampara truly or whether he is actually deviating from the parampara. A less intelligent people, less intelligent person, one is foolish, they are mainly attached to the personality, they are not actually attached to the truth which they represent. They are basically attached to just the personality. But a truly learned person, Prabhupada writes here, this is an important point, will not hear from one who does not represent the acharya. Even though one may be speaking very charismatically, but if he is not representing the acharya, he will not hear from him. When the truly learned person is attached to the truth, whoever speaks the truth, even though he may not be speaking very eloquently, but as long as he is speaking the truth as it is, he will want to hear from him. On the other hand, a foolish person, he is more attached to the external things, how he speaks, than what he speaks, whether he is representing the parampara properly. So this is a very important point which Maharaj explained. So then he, another point Prabhupada says is that speaker and hearer should be bona fide. If it is not there, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes is useless labor both for the speaker and for the audience. Even in the first chapter of the Gita, Bhishma Dev has explained that, what is that? Kula Vriddha Kuru. Shankan Dadmup. Vayo Vriddha. I think two words Vriddha comes. Bhishma Dev was very advanced in age, and also he was like very expert in his skills. So similarly here, both these this thing are coming. Another important point is that, you see, like again the same point which I explained, that no obscure meaning should be screwed out, but it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. So for example, when we read the Bhagavad Gita, so Bhagavad Gita is called as Gita Upanishad. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken in a Upanishadic language. Upanishadic language means, so what does it mean? In the Vedic literatures, there are actually four sections of the Vedic literatures. Brahmanas, Samhitas, Aranyakas and Upanishads. So Brahmana means, it does not refer to the person Brahmana, Brahmana Kshatriya. It refers to a particular section of the Vedic literature called as Brahmana, Brahmana section. So Brahmana, Samhitas, Aranyakas and Upanishads. So Brahmana sections are meant for the Brahmacharis, Samhitas are meant for the Grahasthas, Aranyakas are meant for the Vanaprasthas, and Upanishads are meant for the sannyasis. And so in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken the Gita in a Upanishadic language. That means Upanishads are meant for the sannyasis. Sannyasis are people who have detached from their whole family life. So why Krishna has spoken in Upanishadic language? Because Arjuna showed such detachment. Right in the second chapter, he says that Nachaitad Vidmaha Kataranno Gariyo యద్వా జయేమ యదివాణో జయేయు యానేవ హత్వాణ జిజీవిషామస్ తే వస్తితా ప్రముఖే దార్తరాష్ట్ర నో ఐ థింక్ మిక్స్డ్ అప్ డిఫరెంట్ వర్సెస్ నచేద్వద్మః కతరణో గరియు యద్వా జయేమ యదివాణో జయేయు యానేవ హత్వాణ జిజీవిషామస్ సేమ్ ఓకే సో యు సీ ఇన్ ద సెకండ్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ ద గీత అర్జున లైక్ ఐ థింక్ డిఫరెంట్ వర్సెస్ హీ సేస్ దట్ ఐ నైదర్ డిజైర్ ద హ్యాపీనెస్ ఆఫ్ హెవెన్లీ ప్లానెట్స్ నార్ డు ఐ డిజైర్ ద విక్టరీ అండ్ ద ఆపులెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద ఎర్త్లీ ప్లానెట్ బికాస్ కృష్ణాస్ ఆర్గ్యుమెంట్ వాస్ దట్ ఇఫ్ యూ విన్ ద బ్యాటిల్ యూ విల్ బికమ్ అన్రైవల్డ్ సోవరెనిటీ ఓవర్ ద ఎర్త్ అండ్ ఇఫ్ యూ గెట్ కిల్డ్ ఇన్ ద బ్యాటిల్ యూ విల్ గెట్ గో టు హెవెన్లీ ప్లానెట్స్ బట్ అర్జున he's not just simply making a statement, he's seriously means it. I neither desire the opulence of the other world, the heavenly planets, nor I desire opulence here. Because Arjuna showed such a detachment, in fact, Baldev Vidya Bhushan explains, he mentions, I think, 4 or 6 qualifications for getting knowledge. You already gone through second chapter, which chapter Gita you have? Second chapter to begin. Okay, okay. Yeah. Baldev Vidya Bhushan explains, I think, 4 or 5 or 6 qualifications for getting knowledge. And then he mentions how Arjuna possesses these qualifications. Indifference, faith, how detachment from temporary things, like that he mentions 4 or 6 qualifications. So here we see, because Arjuna had that qualification, Krishna spoke the Gita. So Arjuna exhibited such level of detachment, so therefore Krishna spoke the Gita in a Upanishadic language. But why I am speaking this is now that, but in the current scenario, because Mahaprabhu has given instruction to preach the teachings of the Gita. Yare deko tare kaha Krishna upadesh. So we have to still preach the, we have to preach the teachings of Gita. But the current day people, do they have anything similar to the detachment of Arjuna? In fact, the current day, modern day people, the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga, they are such deeply rooted in the enjoyment tendency. So in that case, like the language we have to use to teach Gita will be definitely radically different from the kind of language which Krishna used in the Bhagavad Gita. We have to present the same teachings, but in order to present to the current day audience who don't have any sense of detachment which Arjuna had, then we have to use a language which by which we can connect to their minds. Like one devotee was saying that, so there is a website, I don't know in other metros, but in Bombay it is there, so youpartyvedrive.com. youpartyvedrive.com. So that means that there is so much government rules that one should not drive in a drunken state. So they have made a website that when you are drunk, that if you want a driver, then we will actually come and drive you to your home. You keep partying till 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and we will come and actually drive you back to home. So further they have created a website. So the point is that the modern day conditioned souls, they are inventing newer and newer means for actually enjoying sense gratification. But still our duty as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servants, we still have to preach Gita. So therefore, in order to connect with them, the language which we have to present, definitely it will be the content will be same, but the language may be radically different from the original language Krishna used in speaking to Arjuna. Krishna used the Upanishadic language because Arjuna showed such a level of detachment. So in the modern day, this one, we may have to use like a lot of jokes and different stories and different, in order to catch the attention of the people, some PowerPoint and every now and then some videos, in order to present the same knowledge of the Gita. We have to maintain the loyalty. No obscure meaning should be screwed out, but at the same time, present in an interesting manner, manner according to the understanding of, for the understanding of the audience. Next verse. Shaunaka uvacha Suta Suta Mahabhaga Vadano Vadatamvara Katam Bhagavatim Punyam Yadaha Bhagavan Shukaha.
Shaunaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Sukadeva Goswami.
So now till the 2nd to 13th verse, there are different questions asked by Shaunaka Rishi to Suta Goswami. That is there. So this chapter contains, we can say, three sections. Till the 13th verse, there are the questions asked by Shaunaka Rishi to Suta Goswami. And then from the 14th verse, in response to those questions, Suta Goswami narrates the, like, what did actually Vyasdev do, the work of Vyasdev. He first starts narrating the giving answer to the first question about the history of Srimad Bhagavatam, the question related to Srimad Bhagavatam. So that he describes from 14th verse till the 25th verse. That means the works performed by Vyasdev, how he divided the Vedas. And then the last section from 26 to 33, that describes Vyasdev's dissatisfaction, his contemplation, and the appearance of Narada Muni. The three sections. The first section contains the different questions, and the second section contains the answer to the one of the first questions about the history of the Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami describes the Vyasdev's work, and then after describing that, then the last section describes the condition of Vyasdev. So here we see that Sir Prabhupada explains two points. There are two kinds of bogus speakers. One is the impersonalist, or and another is the professional Bhagavatam reciters. In the case of the impersonalist, they actually twist certain meanings of the Bhagavatam in order to suit their own impersonalistic views. They interpret certain verses of the Bhagavatam to suit their own impersonalistic views. And the professional Bhagavatam reciters, their attitude is that they directly jump into the 10th canto, neglecting the other cantos. These are the two kinds of bogus speakers. So because the audience was very eager to hear, they are addressing Suta two times. Suta, Suta. Because of the great eagerness and joy, they are mentioning two times. O Suta, you are Mahabhaga, you are greatly fortunate, and you are Vadatam Vara, you are the best of the speakers. Katam Bhagavatam Bhagavatim Punyam. Please narrate the pure stories related to the Supreme Lord, which were spoken at the assembly of Parishit Maharaj. Yadaha Bhagavan Shukaha. Sukadeva Goswami spoke in the assembly of Parishad Maharaj. Kasmin yuge pravrtteyam staneva kena hetuna kutas sanchodita krishna kritavan samhitam munihi.
In what period and at what place was this first begun? And why was this taken up? From where did Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, the great sage, get the inspiration to compile this literature?
So this is the here the first question was asked in second verse. Please narrate the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then that in this verse, there are four questions related to the history of the Bhagavatam. In what place was the Bhagavatam compiled? And in what period was it compiled? Kasmin Yuge, in which time? And Stane, in what place? And third is that, Kena Hetuna, for what reason? For what reason did Vyasadeva compile? Kuta Sanchodita. Sanchodita means inspiration. Who inspired Vyasadeva to compile this work? So these were the four questions asked. So Prabhupada writes here how the inquiry should be relevant and intelligent. Vyasadeva had already written the Vedas and then Mahabharata for the less intelligent, Shudras, women, etc. So Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all of them because it has nothing to do with anything mundane. So Prabhupada is actually going ahead of the purports. Ahead of the verses, he is giving the what is going to come later, he is giving it right now itself. Next verse. Tasya putro mahayogi samadrin nirvikalpakaha yekantamatir unnidro gudo mudavi veyate.
He is Vyasadeva's son. Was a great devotee, an equibalanced monist, whose mind was always concentrated in monism. He was transcendental to mundane activities, but being unexposed, he appeared like an ignorant person.
So verse number 4 to 6, the sages are describing Shukadeva Goswami, and then they also ask a question about Shukadeva Goswami. So in this verse, they mention six qualities of Sukadeva Goswami. Tasya putro means Vyasadeva's son. First quality is Mahayogi, he is a great mystic. Samadran, he was equipoised, he was seeing everything equally. Nirvikalpakaha, what is the word to word translation? Absolute monist, or he was basically absorbed in impersonal Brahman. He was realized in Brahman. Monist means they are attached to the Brahman conception. Ekantamati, that means Ekantamati, his mind was fixed in one goal. Unnidra, so Nidra means sleep, but it can also mean because of ignorance a person sleeps. So Unnidra means basically, one who has dispelled all the ignorance. One has dispelled all the ignorance. This is the fifth quality. And then the Gudo Muda Iveyate. Gudo Muda Iveyate. That means, although he was having all these qualities, he had dispelled ignorance, he was one-pointed in the goal, etc. But still, he was hiding himself like he was hiding his real position. And he was presenting himself like a fool. Appeared like a fool. So Prabhupada here writes about the... He says that Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul. But although he was a liberated soul, but he remained always alert not to be trapped by the illusory energy. If you remember, just think about it, that if a liberated soul always remains alert and cautious of Maya, like how much a sadhaka should remain cautious of Maya? That's why we discussed last week about three things required for the battle against Maya. Weapon, one should be equipped with the weapons, one should be trained, and also one should be alert. And he had the weapons, and one should be, if a person, one should be trained also. If a person is not alert, like I think a few days back, some Central Reserve Polish people, they were going in a van. Suddenly some terrorists came, and then they started shooting at them, and 8 people were killed. So they were not have been alert at that time. They never expected that they were going in the bus, some terrorists would come and attack the bus containing all the Central Reserve Police. So one has to be alert. They were definitely equipped with all the weapons. They were having the weapons. They were also trained also. But they were attacked in a situation when they were not alert. So therefore, 8 people lost their lives. So this is an important point. Even a liberated soul is alert. And then Prabhupada compares a conditioned soul versus a liberated soul. So conditioned soul is interested in sense gratification. Liberated soul is always engaged in the progressive path of spiritual attainment. Conditioned soul is absorbed in matter. Liberated soul is indifferent to matter. So conditioned soul is, both are alert. Conditioned soul is alert for sense gratification. Liberated soul is alert for self-realization. Next verse. So in the next verse, so he has explained the 6 qualities in the 4th verse. So in the next verse, Shaunaka Rishi gives an instance in which one of these 6 qualities is actually exhibited. Or one of these 6 qualities is actually prominently seen. So the 3rd quality, Nirvikalpaka, means he was a monist, or he was fully realized in Brahman. Or we can say that he had complete absorption in the Brahman. So this particular quality of Nirvikalpaka, his absorption in Brahman, that is actually, in order to explain this quality, an instance is being told in the 5th verse. An instance in which Sukadeva Goswami exhibited his absorption in Brahman. Drishtyanu yantam rishimatmajam apyanagnam. Devyo hriya paridadurna sutasya chitram. Tadvikshya pruchyati munau jagadustavasti. Stripum bidanatu sutasya vivikta drishte.
While Sri Vyasdev was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth, although Sri Vyasdev himself was not naked. But they had not done so when his son had passed. The sage inquired about this, and the young ladies replied that his son was purified and when looking at them made no distinction between male and female. But the sage made such distinctions.
So here, there's an instance when Sukadeva Goswami was actually going. So some young, passing by in a particular place, some young girls were actually taking bath. So Sukadeva Goswami was young. You can see the contrast between Sukadeva Goswami and Vyasdev. Sukadeva Goswami was young and 16 year old, and all his limbs were very nicely formed, and he did not wear any clothes, and he was looking here and there, and he was looking everywhere. But the ladies, when they saw Sukadeva Goswami was very beautiful and young and did not wear any clothes and was looking here and there, and the ladies did not actually cover their body with their clothes. On the other hand, when Vyasdev passed by, Vyasdev followed after Sukadeva Goswami. Vyasdev was an old person. All these girls were like in the position of his daughter or granddaughter. and Vyasdev had covered his body with her clothes, with clothes, and Vyasdev was not even looking in the direction of the girls. But these girls, they covered their bodies on seeing Vyasdev. So then the Vyasdev was surprised. Then he asked them that, why did you cover your clothes when I passed by? Because I am a old person. I was wearing clothes. I did not even look in your direction. But on the other hand, you did not cover your clothes when my son passed by, was very youthful, did not wear any clothes, and he was looking here and there. Then they said, actually, I think some water is falling here. Huh? Oh, the laptop is... So the ladies said that, actually, because you make distinctions between the male and female, on the other hand, Sukadev Goswami does not make any distinctions. He has got pure eyes, vivikta drishte. The last line of the verse, vivikta drishte comes. Because he has got pure eyes, he doesn't make any distinctions, so therefore we didn't cover our bodies. So this shows that women have got the sixth sense. So the women said that we are actually skillful in the arts. We have the power to know the inner truth of the men and women just by looking at their eyes. So just by looking at the eyes of Sukadev Goswami, we could understand that how he is an exalted person, what is actually going on in his mind. The women have got the sixth sense. So, but here Prabhupada mentions that Vyasdev was also a liberated soul. It's not that Vyasdev, because they covered their clothes, that means like Vyasdev was not an ordinary person. Actually, Vyasdev was also a liberated soul, but because he was actually playing the role of a grihastha, he was acting like a grihastha. He did not pretend to be like a liberated soul. Like, he did not act, because as a grihastha, one has to play that role. So therefore, he did not, he behaved like a grihastha. So therefore, he was making distinction between the male and the female. Therefore, the women actually, they covered their bodies. So just like we see that, whichever role the Lord actually takes up, he actually acts according to that particular role. When Varagadeva appeared like a hog, he acted like a, behaved like a hog. And when Krishna took up a role of a Kshatriya or Vaishya, he behaved like that. Next verse. Katam alakshita paurai samprapta kuru jangala unmatta muka jadavat Vicharan Gaja Sahvaye.
How was he, Srila Sukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering the provinces of Kuru and Jangal, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded?
So they asked the question about Sukadev Goswami, that how was Sukadev Goswami recognized by the common people? So here Prabhupada explains the main purport is that in order to recognize a great soul, in order to recognize a rich person, you recognize him by his dress and opulences. In order to recognize a diseased person, you have certain symptoms. But in order to recognize a learned person, he also has certain symptoms. And those symptoms will be visible only when you are actually prepared to hear from that person. So Prabhupada writes here that a sage is recognized not by his sight but by hearing from him. If one is not prepared to hear the words of a sadhu, then there is no profit in actually meeting a sadhu. So this is the point which Prabhupada writes here. The seventh verse, they ask that how did Parikshit Maharaj meet Sukadev Goswami? Katamva Pandaveyasya Rajarsher Muninasaha Samvada Samabhutata Yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi.
How did it so happen that King Parikshit made this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, Bhagavatam, to be sung to him?
So here Bhagavatam is called as Satvati Shruti. This is one of the names of the Bhagavatam. Other names of the Bhagavatam are like Shuka Samhita. Also another name. Next verse. Sa godohana matram hi griheshu grihamedina avekshate mahabhagas tirti kurvam tadashramam.
He, Sukadev Goswami, was accustomed to stay at the door of a householder only long enough for a cow to be milked. And he did this just to sanctify the residence.
So this is a very important verse, which is important lesson for all the people in the known order, brahmacharis. So here, the sages are asking that usually a person like Sukadev Goswami would stay at a person's house only for the duration of the time in which a cow is milked. But how come that Sukadev Goswami spent 7 days with Parikshit Maharaj? So there are two points. The first point is that why do the saintly people, they actually spend such less time with the householders? Or here it means like people who are connected with money and women. So here Prabhupada explains here, the duty of a householder is that they should simply travel from place to place. A sannyasi has no business with the householders, save and except enlighten them in transcendental knowledge. So asking for alms from them should be for the purpose of sanctifying his home. And he explains that a sannyasi should not be allured by the glamour of the householder's opulence and thus become subservient to the worldly man. Nishkinchanasya Bhagavat Bhajanon Mukasya Paramparam Jagamishur Bhavasagarasya Ha Hant Sandarshanam Vishayinam Atayoshitamcha Ha Hanta Hanta Vishabhakshanato Pyasadu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that For a person who is seriously desiring to cross the material ocean and engage in the loving service of the Lord, seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification or seeing a woman who is similarly interested is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. So therefore, generally saintly people, they would just spend only that much time with the householders, and that too just for the purpose of actually giving transcendental knowledge or sanctifying their home. So Prabhupada told Hridayananda Maharaj that when you go to the householder's house, don't be envious of their opulence. If I also had become like them, then I would get more opulence. So therefore, this is an important point. Another point is that we see that the next point will come later, the next verse. But Shukadeva Goswami, who would normally spend only that much time with Parishad in a householder's house, he actually spent 7 days with Parishad Maharaj. So, next verse. Abhimanyasutam suta prahur bhagavatottamam tasya janma mahascharyam mahascharyam karma nichagrinihina.
Maharaj Parikshit is a great first-class devotee of the Lord, and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him.
So here he says that, please describe about the activities of Maharaj Parikshit also. So till the previous verse, till the 8th verse, there are questions about Shukadeva Goswami. 4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6, 7 and 8. Mainly about Shukadeva Goswami and how did the meeting between Parishad Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami take place? How was Shukadeva Goswami recognized? And why did Shukadeva Goswami spend so much time with Parishad Maharaj when he would usually spend only short time? These are the three questions asked. But now in this verse, they are asking questions about the Parishad Maharaj's birth and activities. There is one purport in which Prabhupada says that everything about Parishad Maharaj is wonderful. Everything about Parishad Maharaj is wonderful. His birth is wonderful because he was protected by the Supreme Lord. His activities are wonderful because he punished Kali for attempting to kill a cow. And even his death was wonderful because he got notice for death, that he would die within seven days. So one devotee added that everything about Parishad Maharaj is wonderful, his birth, activities and death. Not only that, even the questions asked by Parishad Maharaj, they are also wonderful. You will see as the Bhagavatam proceeds, the different questions asked by Parishad Maharaj, they are so thoughtful. And because of those questions, Shukadeva Goswami speaks so many stories. And another purport, so you see that Parishad Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, externally speaking, like Shukadeva, they are completely two different personalities. Shukadeva Goswami was so renowned that he did not even wear any clothes. And he was so much absorbed in Brahman, and he was like such a deeply renounced person. But Parishad Maharaj was like an emperor of the whole world. But Prabhupada writes in one purport in the second canto, but both were actually on the same platform. Both were actually on the same level, although it appeared that externally they were actually different people. There 2.3.16 in that purport he explains. Next verse. So then in the verse number So verse number 9 to 12 is about, basically about the questions about Parikshit Maharaj. 10th verse. So they are describing more qualities of Parikshit Maharaj. Sa samrat kasya vaheto panduna mana vardhanaha prayopavishto gangayam anadrityadiradshriyam.
He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fall and fast until death?
So there are two qualities of Parikshit Maharaj about his opulence. His opulence was that he was king of all the world, oceans and seas. He inherited from his Yudhishthira Maharaj. Second quality was that Parikshit Maharaj was doing well in his administration. He didn't have any frustration. He was increasing the prestige of the Pandavas. And then after describing these two qualities, so they are saying that there was nothing undesirable in the life of Parikshit Maharaj, in his opulence or administration. So why did he give up all this? Next verse. Namanti yat padaniketam atmana Shivaya hani yadanani shatrava katam savira shriyamanga dushtyaja yuvai satotsratsrumaho sahasubhi.
He was the great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed insuperable kingly opulence. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life?
So again, more qualities of Parikshit Maharaj are asked, and then again asked a question. They are asking a question. So he was youthful and he was full of strength. That's another quality. And then the next quality is that the kings were willingly coming forward and paying taxes to Parikshit Maharaj for their own benefit. It means like he didn't have any some frustration in administration or something like that. Everyone was perfectly obeying him. And then again it's mentioned that he had all the kingly opulences, which was very difficult to give up. Shriyam anga dushtya jam. Dushtya jam means difficult to give up. So despite that, then the last line, yuvai shata utsrashtum aho sahasubhi. Then why did he actually give up that wealth along with saha asubhi? Saha means along with, asubhi means along with his life here. Why did he not only give up that wealth, but why also did he give up actually his life here, which is even more dear than the wealth? So next verse. Shivaya lokasya bhavaya bhutaye yavuttama shloka parayana jana jivanti natmartam asau parashrayam mumocha nirvidya kuta kalevaram.
Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So even though the emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body which was shelter for others.
So you see, in the 10th and 11th verse, they were asking questions in regards to what could be the, like normally a person gives up and renounces everything because of certain frustration in the material life. Maybe he is losing some wealth, or he is not able to, he is having some lot of stress in the administration, people are not obeying him, or he has become old. These are some material reasons for renouncing. But in the 12th verse, they gave those reasons, but none of these reasons were there, but still he gave up. But in the 12th verse, in this verse they are saying that Shivaya Lokasya Bhavaya Bhutaye Ya Uttama Shloka Parayana. Those who are surrendered to Uttama Shloka, those who are surrendered to Uttama Shloka, they actually Shivaya Lokasya, they live for the auspiciousness of the world. Shivaya Lokasya. And how do they perform auspiciousness for the world? They perform auspiciousness of the world or the world in two ways. Bhavaya and Bhutaye. Bhavaya means they give auspicious, they work for the auspiciousness of the world by guiding them in getting out of the cycle of birth and death. Bhavaya means by extinguishing their repeated birth and death. And Bhutaye means by supplying their, they also work for their auspiciousness by supplying their material needs. So the those people who are surrendered to the Lord, they don't live for themselves, they work for others, for their material benefits and also for the spiritual benefits. So when his body was giving shelter to the people for their material needs and also for the liberation, then why did Parishit Maharaj give up that body which was acting like a shelter for others? So this is like a spiritual reason. Generally, even the highly elevated people who are completely detached, but they don't give up something which is being utilized in the service of others. But Parishit Maharaj, why did he try to give up his body which was engaged in the service of others? That is the question over here. One should not give up something upon which others depend for life, even though one may be personally detached from it. But here, the sages are surprised that why did Parishit Maharaj give up his body which was giving shelter to others? So that is the like we can say the spiritual reason. It doesn't. So here Prabhupada writes elaborate purport about qualities of a king or leader, qualities of an ideal king, and he also talks about the when such an ideal king is ruling a kingdom, what are the symptoms of the kingdom ruled by such a king. He is mentioning different points in the purport, like qualities of an ideal king. He mentions five points. He has no attachment to worldly opulences, always busy in the welfare work of the public. And third point is that he knows perfectly well how to conduct administration for everyone's happiness, including men, animals and plants. And fourthly, he is not selfishly interested, neither self-centered nor self-extended. Fifth point is that his interest is identical with that of Supreme Lord. The symptoms of a kingdom ruled by such a king is that first, his kingdom is full of all opulences. Human beings need not eat animals. And thirdly, there is ample supply of food, grain, fruit, milk. And fourthly, all living beings obey the prescribed duties. And fifth is that no disturbance between one living being and another. So then, after asking all these questions, then in the 13th verse, the sages are expressing their confidence upon Suta Goswami. Because somebody may ask that why are the sages asking this question to Suta Goswami, who is not expert in chanting the Vedic mantras? Maybe they could have asked somebody else. So therefore, the Shaunaka Rishi is clarifying that although Suta Goswami is not expert in chanting the Vedic mantras, why they still chose Suta Goswami to get answers to these questions. Can read the translation, 13th verse.
We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects, except some portions of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answer to the all the questions we have just put to you.
So Suta Goswami is expert in all the portions except some portions of the Vedas. That means he is not expert in chanting the Vedic mantras in the proper meter. So one may wonder from this question that when they are saying that we consider you expert in all subjects except the Vedas, Chandasam. So then one may get a question, if Suta Goswami was not expert in the Vedas and yet he was being requested to narrate the Srimad Bhagavatam, yet he was being narrated to, it was being asked to narrate the Bhagavad Puranam or the Puranas, then one may get the question, then how can the Puranas be considered Vedic? How can the Puranas be part of the Vedas? They are saying that you are not expert in the Vedas, except for we consider you expert in all subjects except the Vedas. Prabhupada translates us except some portions of the Vedas. Some acharyas say that we know that you are expert in everything except the Vedas. So that means the fact that they have asked then Suta Goswami to speak about the Puranas, that means they may get a question that Puranas are not Vedic. The natural conclusion may be then Puranas are, how can the Puranas be considered part of the Vedas? So Jiva Goswami explains, anticipating these objections, Jiva Goswami says that in order to recite the mantras in the original Vedas, yeah, you need to have a certain like a qualification. You need to have you need to be properly Brahman initiated, etc. But in order to study the Itihasas and Puranas, one need not be like Brahman initiated. Anybody can chant it. Just like anybody can chant the holy name, anybody can study the Itihasas and Puranas. Similarly, Itihasas and Puranas are purely Vedic, but still even a Shudra or even an outcast can approach them, just as he or she may chant the holy name of the Lord. So in the case of the Vedic mantras, in order to chant those mantras, like those who are Shudras or those who are women, they are not supposed to chant those Vedic mantras. In the Ramayana, there is a story which is many people take the story and put a controversy. That there was one Brahmana who came and reported to Lord Ram that my son has died, therefore you are responsible for the death of my son. Usually, in those times, there is never an instance of son dying before the father. So, first of all, this kind of reporting itself is completely, in Kali Yuga, if somebody comes and says that my son has died, therefore, Prime Minister is responsible for it, people will think that he has gone crazy. But in there, when Lord Ram heard this, then the Brahmana said that because you are sinful, you are responsible, and that is why my son has died before, even when I am present. And Lord Ram consulted his ministers, what is the reason that his son has died even before the father, even the father is alive? The minister said that there must be some adharma must be happening in your kingdom, because you have not checked that adharma, that as a reaction to that adharma, his brahmana's son has died. So then Lord Ram went out in the city to find out what adharma is happening. So when he went, he saw that in one place, a Shudra was actually performing austerities and he was trying to study the Vedas. And then Lord Ram actually punished that Shudra by killing him. I'm not sure whether it's killing, but the Shudra was given punishment. So people quote this story to show that, oh, why did Lord Ram give that punishment to that Shudra? He was only trying to perform austerity and trying to study the Vedas. So again, we are in a different cultural setting. One of the types of adharma is that Bhagavatam 7th canto also explained. There are 5 types of adharma. One of the type of adharma is that performing somebody else's duty. When there is no need of emergency. The Shudra was actually trying to study perform the duty of a Brahmana. So it was an adharma. So therefore Lord Brahm punished him. So the point is that, why I am told this story is that generally to chant the Vedic mantras, yeah, there is a Brahminical qualification is required. But to study the Puranas and Itihasas, there is no such qualification. The Puranas and Itihasas are as Vedic as the original Vedas, but at the same time, they are actually more easily accessible to any kind of people. That is the speciality of the Puranas and Itihasas. So Jiva Goswami says that just like the holy name of the Supreme Lord, although it is the ultimate fruit of the Vedas, but anybody can chant the holy names. One can gain all perfection simply by chanting the holy name. Similarly, one can learn the essence of the Vedas by studying the Itihasas and Puranas. So you cannot say that just because Suta Goswami was asked to narrate the Puranas, that means when they are saying that you are expert in everything except the Vedas and you please narrate the Puranas, one cannot say that Puranas are not Vedic. No, the point is that just like the holy name is the ultimate fruit of the Vedas, it can be chanted by anyone. Similarly, Puranas and Itihasas are as Vedic as the original Vedas. At the same time, it can be spoken by anyone and it can be heard by anyone. So we'll take a 5 minutes break and we'll resume. Some portions of the way. Yeah, we'll continue. We'll go a little fast. So Prabhupada writes in this purport, he compares between the Brahmanas who are expert in the chanting of the Vedic mantras, he compares them with the Parivrajakacharyas, the learned Vaishnava preachers who are expert in the Puranas. You see different points. The Brahmanas are meant to administer some fruitive sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas. But the Parivrajakacharyas, they are meant to disseminate transcendental knowledge to one and everyone. And the Brahmanas are expert in the pronunciation of the Vedic mantras with proper meter and accent. But the Parivrajakacharyas, they are not always expert in the pronunciation of the mantras. They have deeper realization of the Vedic knowledge. So in the case of the Puranas, the difference between the Puranas and Itihasas and the Vedas is that the Vedas come under the category of Shruti Prasthan. So there are three sources of knowledge: Shruti Prasthan, Smriti Prasthan, Nyaya Prasthan. Shruti Prasthan means the knowledge in the Vedas and Upanishads. The Vedas and Upanishads, the emphasis is given to hearing and repeating exactly the exact meter. But the Smriti Prasthan means the emphasis is given to understanding and explaining in one's own words. So in the Smriti Prasthan, the same knowledge of the Shruti is there in the Smriti, but it is presented with the help of the stories and different historical instances. The Puranas and Itihasas come under the category of Smriti Prasthan. So I gave the example, last time I gave in the class or after the class. The law books are considered like the Shruti Prasthan. Law books only contain the laws, and the law journals are compared to the Smriti Prasthan. Law journals establish the same laws with the help of different case studies. So 1974 in Allahabad, Ram Agarwal filed this case against this particular person, and this was the dispute, these were the arguments from this side, these were the counter arguments from that side, and finally this judgment was given based on these laws. So the same law is established to the different actually stories. So in the Smriti Prasthan, in the Puranas and Itihasas, the exact verbal repetition is not given the importance. The importance is given to understanding and realization. So Suta Goswami, he is not expert in the pronunciation of the mantras, but he is definitely deeply learned, he is deeply rooted in the proper understanding and realization, which is more important than the mere pronunciation. That's why Prabhupada writes in the purport, the most important sentence in the purport is that realization is more important than parrot-like chanting. So generally people think that therefore the conclusion is that, like in the case of the Vedic literature, such pronouncing of the mantras, that is possible simply by practice of chanting those mantras. But in order to realize, it's more difficult. It will not come simply by parrot-like chanting. You have to actually live by that knowledge and apply that knowledge, then the person will get the realization. So, therefore, one should not consider the Brahmanas as more important than the Parivrajakacharyas. So, that is the conclusion. So, both are one and different simultaneously because they are meant for the same end in different ways. Yeah, we'll go to the next verse. Nyaya Prasthan. So Nyaya Prasthan, the same laws are explained. So Smriti Prasthan explains the laws using stories. So Nyaya Prasthan explains the laws with the help of logic and reasoning. So the Vedas and Upanishads come under the category of Shruti Prasthan. Puranas and Itihasas, they come under the category of Smriti Prasthan. And Vedanta Sutra comes under the category of Nyaya Prasthan. Huh. Prasthan means, I think... Huh? What? Path. Path. Yeah. Yeah, here we are, three sources of knowledge, three paths, you can say. Three, Shruti Prasthan. In a literal meaning, these are three sources of knowledge, Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya. Huh. Still, yeah, he may be expert also, but he can be expert also, but essential quality of Parivirajakacharya, the preacher, is that he is more deeply realized in the conclusion of the Vedic knowledge. He may not be expert in the, actually, expert in the pronunciation. Yeah, those who are, so in the case of Parivrajakacharya, in the case of the essential difference in Shruti and Smriti is that in Smriti, the understanding and application is given more importance. But in the Shruti, the exact repetition of the mantra, that is given more emphasis. But in the Smriti, the understanding and application is given more importance. So those who are learned in the Puranas, yeah, they may or may not be expert in the chanting with proper pronunciation, but they have to be expert in the understanding of the concepts and how to apply according to time, place and circumstance, which is the speciality of Sutta Goswami. Equally? Anybody can? No, I mentioned that in order to chant the Vedic mantras, one has to be Brahman initiated. But in order to hear the Puranas and Itihasas, anybody can hear them. Even the people from low class people. Because in the case of Sutta Goswami, he was not born in a Brahminical family. He was born in a mixed caste. But still, because he was realized, although he was not expert in the Vedic mantras, but he is qualified for chanting the Puranas and Itihasas. Shukadev Goswami Prabhupada writes that Shukadev Goswami did not hesitate to speak Srimad Bhagavatam because Sutta Goswami, who was born in a mixed caste, was present in the audience. Nor did the sages of Naimisharanya hesitate to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Sutta Goswami, although he was born in a mixed caste. That means, Prabhupada says, that means like birth was not given the consideration in regards to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. In regards to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he may not have got a Brahminical initiation. But because he is actually learned and living by it, so therefore they chose to hear from him. So 14th verse, he starts answering. So Sutta Goswami said, so Vyasadeva was born in the, in the Dwapar Yuga, there are three portions in the Dwapar Yuga. The three portions, one is the a beginning portion, Sandhya Rupa, then the middle portion and the end portion. Sandhya Rupa, Yuga Rupa and Sandhyamsha Rupa. So Vyasadeva was born in the end portion of Dwapar Yuga. The last portion of Dwapar Yuga, Vyasadeva was born, and at that time, Vyasadeva actually wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what the time period in which the Srimad Bhagavatam was written, that is indicated here. That means the last portion of Dwapar Yuga. Next, 15th verse. So once Vyasadeva was performing Achaman with water in the Saraswati river, and then in a solitary place he was actually meditating, and after purifying himself, he was actually sat for meditation. So at that time, when Vyasadev sat alone to concentrate, the 16th to 18th verse describes the what were the anomalies which Vyasadev saw, which will come in the future. So 16th to 18th verse, we'll recite all these three verses together. Paravaragya sarishi kalena vyakta ramhasa yugadharma vyatikaram praptam bhuvi yuge yuge bhautikanam cha bhavanam shakti hrasam cha tatkritam ashraddadanam nissatvan durmedan harshitayushah durbhagam cha janan vikshya munir divyena chakshusha sarvavarnashramana yaddadyau hitamamogadrig.
The great sage who was fully equipped in knowledge could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless person in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus, he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and orders of life.
So Vyasadeva was paravaragya. Paravaragya means he knows the past, present and future. And also in the 18th verse, this another quality is described. Amogadruk. He had a pure vision. Again, the 18th verse, the word comes. Divyena chakshusha. He observed by his divya chakshu, by his spiritual eye. So what did Vyasadeva see? The 7 points are explained. The 16th verse describes yuga dharma vyatikaram. That means destruction of the dharmas of yugas on the earth. Bhuvi yuge yuge. Bhuvi means on the earth. Destruction of the dharmas of the yugas on the earth. And second is that bhautikanam cha bhavanam. Decrease in the bodily strength. And third is that ashraddha danam, faithlessness. And fourth he saw is that nissatvan, decrease in sattvaguna, or it can mean that dominance of rajogun and tamogun. And the fifth thing which he saw is that durmedan, that means people will be dull-witted. The sixth quality is that hrasita ayusha, that people will have short life. And seventh is that durbhagam. There will be a lot of misfortunes for the people. So in one sense, it is similar to the prayena alpayusha sabhya. The sages were mentioning that, but Vyasadeva could see all these anomalies. So now, after seeing all these things, what did Vyasadeva do? So Prabhupada writes in this purport, just like an astrologer can see the future of man, or an astronomer can foretell solar and lunar eclipses, liberated souls, due to their sharp vision of spiritual attainment, can foretell the future of mankind. And transcendentalists are real friends of people in general. They are selfless workers, always busy in planning something which may help in all statuses and orders of life. We see that word in the 18th verse. Sarva varnashramanam. That means he began to contemplate on what would be beneficial for all the varnas and ashramas. Not just for some particular his community or his caste. For all kinds of people. He wanted to do something benefit for them. Sarva varnashramanam. transcendentalists who represent the mission of Vyasa, Narada, Chaitanya, Rupa, Saraswati, they are the greatest philanthropists. They are all one and the same because their mission is same, that is to deliver souls back to Godhead. 19th verse. So now what did the, after seeing all these anomalies, what did Vyasdev specifically do? That is described from 19th verse till the 25th verse. We'll recite together 19th verse. Chaturhotram karma shuddham prajanam vikshya vaidikam vyadadad yajna santatyai vedam yekam chaturvidam.
He was the sacrifice. He saw that sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas are means by the which people's occupation could be purified. And to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men.
The first thing he did is that he divided the Vedas into four. So Vedas, especially the Vedic literature, contain different sacrifices, injunctions for how to perform sacrifices. So as I mentioned, that there are, like, he divided the Vedas into four and he made further subdivisions of each Veda into different chapters. Just like a mother, when she wants to feed a small child, the small child does not have the capacity to eat the whole chapati. So mother, what she does, she cuts into small pieces, understanding the capacity of the child, and so the child can take small piece one at a time. So similarly, Vyasdev, previously the Vedas were not even in written format, and they were even in the oral format also, they were just in one large portion called Vedas. But Vyasdev could see the capacity of the people of Kali Yuga, so therefore Vyasdev divided the Vedas into many sections and subsections and subsections, so that the people of Kali Yuga can easily concentrate on one section at a time. For what purpose? Yajna santatyai. Yajna santatyai. That means for the continuation of the sacrifices. For the continuation of the sacrifices. So there are four kinds of priests. There are Hota priest, Hota, Udgata, Advaryu and Brahma. For example, the Hota priest, they are actually reciters of the mantras from the Rig Veda. And these are the people who offer oblations. And they offer oblations into the sacrifice. And Advaryu priest, they are expert in the Yajna Veda. And Advaryu priest, they actually prepare the items for sacrifice. Preparing the sacrificial arena, making different preparations for the items. And the Brahma priest, Brahma priest, they are expert in Atharva Veda, and they are knower of all the Vedas. They are knower of all the Vedas. They act like a supervisor. And the Udgata priest, they are expert in the Samaveda, and they also act like a supervisor. They correct different irregularities. They are corrector of irregularities. So in that way, like, different priests, they are actually expert in different section of the Vedas. They are given different tasks. So Vyasdev divided the Vedas, he wrote down the Vedas, and he further subdivided. And then how he gave charge to different people. The 20th verse describes how he wrote the histories and Puranas and Itihasas also. Rig Yaju Sama, you can read the translation, 20th verse.
divisions of the original sources of the knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately, but the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda.
So he also wrote the Puranas and Itihasas. They are considered as the fifth Veda. So this theme will come again and again in Prabhupada's purport, because many Indologists, many scholars, they don't consider Puranas and Itihasas to be Vedic. As for time and again, in different purports, Prabhupada would actually establish the authority of the Puranas and Itihasas as being Vedic. Jiva Goswami, in the Tattva Sandarbha, he gives different references to show that how the Puranas and Itihasas, they are also Vedic. Chandogya Upanishad, there is a verse in Chandogya Upanishad which says that how the Puranas and Itihasas should be considered as the fifth Veda. Huh. So, remembering some point, I forgot. Yeah, there is a verse which says that the personified Vedas, they are crying for the people of Kali Yuga. The personified Vedas, they say, they are crying for, they are taking pity, or they are crying for those people in Kali Yuga who will try to understand them without the help of the Puranas and Itihasas. So this is the lamentation of the personified Vedas, were crying for the people of Kali Yuga who will try to understand them without the help of the Puranas and Itihasas. So in Kali Yuga, if you have to understand the original Vedas, we have to understand only with the help of Puranas and Itihasas. It's not possible to understand. First of all, the original Vedas are not available. Only a small section is available. And even if it is available, nobody has the capacity to read through all the Vedas. Even if the person has the capacity to read through all the Vedas, to comprehend everything and come to the right conclusion, that is practically impossible. Because the Vedic Sanskrit is different from the Sanskrit which is used in the Puranas and Itihasas. Vedic Sanskrit is much more difficult than the Sanskrit which is used in the Puranas and Itihasas. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, if you have to understand the Vedas, you have to understand only with the help of the Puranas and Itihasas. And personified Vedas themselves are saying that. So therefore, there are so many references which say that how the Puranas and Itihasas, they are as Vedic as the original Vedas. Chandogya Upanishad says that they are the fifth Veda. So they are as Vedic, at the same time they are accessible to everyone. So then the 21st and 22nd verse, it is described that how after dividing the Vedas, Vyasadeva gave different Vedas to different people, and he made different sages as responsible for the different Vedas, and to further simplify them for the purpose of others. Vyasadeva made Paila Rishi as the professor of Rig Veda, Jaimini Rishi for Samaveda, Vaishampayana for Yajur Veda, and Sumantu Muni Angira as a professor of Atharva Veda, and then he made Romaharshan Sutta as the professor of Puranas and historical records. So the further teachers, they simplified even more. So therefore, that is the purpose of the, in one sense, the Guru Parampara, the further preachers, because as time progresses, people will degrade even more. Therefore, as the preachers, we have to simplify more and more according to the level of the people, without actually diluting the conclusions. Then 23rd verse describes that all these learned scholars, can read 23rd translation.
All these learned scholars in their turn rendered their interested Vedas into their many disciples, grand disciples and great grand disciples, and thus the representative branches of the followers of the Vedas come into being.
So here he says that Vedas are the original source of knowledge. No branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the Vedas. Everything, any knowledge is actually coming within the Vedas. No one therefore can claim independent knowledge beyond the Vedas. 24th verse. Okay, read the translation.
Thus the great sage Vyasadeva, who is very kind to the ignorant masses, edited the Vedas so they might be assimilated by less intellectual men.
So you see, the Vyasadeva's mood was that, here it is explained that, Kripana Vatsalaha, 24th verse. He was merciful to the most fallen, and therefore he divided the Vedas. So that, Ta Yeva Veda Durmedair Daryante Purushair Yata. It could be understood by the foolish people. So we can see Vyasadeva, we will see the three things, we'll see later, that Vyasadeva had a completely selfless attitude. He was doing this work only out of compassion. He did not even have a tinge of selfish attitude. For the sake of the people of the future, he divided the Vedas. He made into different sections. And there are people who are very less intelligent, and for their sake, who cannot read the Vedas and understand the Vedas, for their sake, what did he do? That is described in the 25th verse.
Out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called the Mahabharata for women and laborers and friends of all afraid of the twice born.
Yeah, there is one point from the previous purport which I want to highlight. So Prabhupada says that there is a stricture that one should not try to learn the Vedas if he is not a qualified Brahmana. But people actually misinterpreted the stricture. Some people who are born in a Brahminical family, they try to exploit the other people by saying that only we are qualified to read the Vedas, only we are qualified to actually learn the Vedas. So they claimed monopoly on the Vedas based on their birthright. And there are other people, by seeing this stricture, they say, oh, this is an injustice to other castes. But Prabhupada is explaining that both of these people are misguided. Just try to understand. Some kind of people, they claim to exploit based on their birthright, and others say that this is an injustice to others. So you see that actually, it is not an injustice. In one sense, certain Brahminical duties, in Udupi, they have this Udupi Krishna deity. So every 2 years, different Udupi Mat sannyasis, they actually have the pariyaya for worshipping the Udupi Krishna deity. So when they worship the deities, right from the morning 3:30 till 11:30, so they have continuous puja, some break and puja, come break. So they can drink or eat something only after 11:30. So they have involved some chanting of the mantra, some worship, and some other mantra, some other chanting of the holy name, some kirtan. So in one sense, when a person who is not having that inclination, if somebody is told to do that, it will be a big burden for him, isn't it? Just by thinking that, oh, 3:30 to 11:30, I have to do all these things, it will be a big nightmare for him, actually. Morning 3:30 to almost 11 o'clock like that. So when the Vedas are saying that, when there's a stricture that one should not try to learn the Vedas who is not a qualified Brahmana, It is not that it is an injustice to the other caste. In fact, we are relieving them of the so many anxieties in doing these activities. It is basically a seeing the particular person's attitude and then engaging them in that. But somebody who has certain attitude for him, he'll be excited by that. So it is not that the scriptures are glorifying one particular activity. Oh, this only the Brahminical activity is higher, maybe the other activity is inferior. No, it is not that one activity is superior to another activity. What is glorious is that with what purpose you do that activity. When you do that activity, when that activity is connected to dharma, like yesterday we were discussing, when kriya is connected to dharma, then it leads to prosperity and auspiciousness. So, no activity is condemned. But what is condemned is that when the activity is connected to adharma. So, that is why Mahabharata says that Lord Vishnu resides in the paricharya of the Shudra. Even somebody is like somebody is having a certain Shudra or Vaishya, when they are doing their activities for the pleasure of Krishna, it is as good as a Brahminical activity. So activity is not condemned. What is condemned is the disconnection from the dharma. So therefore, so both these people, some people who claim their based on their birthright, they try to exploit others. And they try to claim monopoly in the Vedas. And others who criticize these injunctions as this injustice to the other caste. So both people are misguided. So you see how the Prabhupada's purport is actually, it is not one-sided. It is clearly bringing out the wrong attitudes of all class of people. So Vyasadeva's contribution is that he divided the Vedas in various ways, so that they may be practically followed by less intelligent persons in the modes of passion and ignorance. So, in the 25th verse, it's explained that. Yeah, he edited also. He said, like Vyasadeva did two things. He divided the Vedas and also edited the Vedas. Because the original Vedas in the higher planets, the number of verses are much more huge. But for the people of Kali Yuga, he actually edited it, condensed it, and also he divided it. Even the Puranas, Jiva Goswami explains that how the number of verses in the higher planets, explained number of verses of the Puranas, number of verses of the Vedas in the higher planets is this much, but in the earthly planet this much. See, actually condensed or edited also. So 25th verse, he explains about what he did for the Stri Shudra and Dvijabandhu. Stri Shudra Dvijabandhu naam Trayi Na Shruti Gochara. Na Shruti Gochara, who are not qualified to hear the Vedas. And Karma Shreyasi Muda naam. Karma Shreyasi Mudanam Shreya Evam Bhavediha. Thinking that what would be beneficial for them, what is Mudanam, what would be best for these foolish people, Shreya Evam, like what will be the best sadhana for these foolish people, what did he do? Iti Bharatam Akhyanam Kripaya Munina Kritam. So Kripaya, by out of his mercy, he wrote the Mahabharata. So, because twice born people means what? Dvija Bandhu. Dvija means twice born. Those who have undergone two births, that means those who have taken birth because of when the parents perform the Garbhadana Samskara and then the child takes birth, that is the first birth. And second birth is the birth after the thread giving ceremony. When one has undergone both these ceremonies, both these samskaras, he is called as a dvija. And dvija bandhu means, He might have taken birth in a family but not undergone these two ceremonies. So for the sake of Sri, Shudra and Dvijabandhu, who are not qualified to hear the Vedas, he wrote the Mahabharata in order to show them what is the best sadhana for them. So purpose of Mahabharata, it administers the purpose of the Vedas, and therefore within the Mahabharata, the summary of the Veda, that is Bhagavad Gita, is placed. So Prabhupada says that Vyasadev and Krishna, both of them collaborated together. There was a transcendental collaboration for the welfare of the people of the age. So Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, Vyasadev placed it within the Mahabharata. So Vyasadev collaborated with Krishna and in order to do welfare for the people. So now, 26 and 27.
O twice born Brahmanas, till his mind was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in working for the total welfare of all people. Thus, the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself.
Yeah. Of course, one more point in the previous verse purport, Prabhupada says that persons who are empowered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can initiate others in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So he is mentioning that point. So 26 and 27. So now what was the, after doing all this elaborate work, what was the result on Vyasadeva? So you see that Vyasadeva, where was he doing this work? In Badrikashram. In one class, Radhana Swami Maharaj was explaining, Vyasadeva was not sitting in the middle of a city surrounded by so many cars and trains and so much of noise and so much of material sound vibration. He was sitting in Badrikashram, where there was a complete serene atmosphere, absolutely in the mode of goodness. For it's a dham, it's a much more, it's a transcendental place. There was no cause of external disturbance. In city, there is so much of chance of external disturbance. But he was there in a place where there is no disturbance from external sources, but still he was disturbed. There was an internal disturbance. So, evam pravrittasya sada bhutanam shreyasi dvija. So, Shreyasi Dvija, although he had engaged himself in this way for the welfare of all beings, Sarvatmana Sarvatma Kenapi. And so, his motive was that he wanted to do welfare for others. And then, he put his full heart in doing that. It is not that he did it in a half-hearted manner. Sarvatmana means that he put his full heart in doing that welfare. But still, na tushyat hridayam dataha. But his heart was not completely pleased. So it is not that, so Vyasadeva, it is not simply why you do and how you do, but it is also what you do it. So Vyasadeva, why he did it? There was absolutely selfless intention to do welfare for not just for one people or two people, for all people of all time to come. So why you do, there is no problem in that. And how you do it, that also he very systematically, he divided the Vedas and he delegated to different people. He was very expert in that. He did it. How he did it, that's also good. But what he did it, that means what he did is that he divided the Vedas, but there is a problem in what he did it, in the sense that Vyasadeva, I think the one of the previous verses, in the 19th verse, Chaturhotram Karma Shudram. That means Vyasadeva considered that for those people who are not qualified for Jnana Marga, Yoga Marga and Bhakti Marga. So Vyasadev, like for those people who are only qualified for the path of karma, karma kanda, the path of fruitive actions, who are not qualified for Jnana, Yoga or Bhakti Marga, for their sake he actually, like they have to perform all the Vedic sacrifices. For their sake he divided the Vedas, and Vedas mainly contain the injunctions for how to perform sacrifices. He did all those things. And then okay, for the, even for the Sri and Shudra and Dvijabandhu, he wrote the Mahabharata. But then, here for those people who are qualified for bhakti, he did not write an exclusive literature which will glorify the Supreme Personality of God. Although he had glorified bhakti in all these Puranas, Itihasas, Mahabharata also contains glorification of bhakti. Vedas also contains glorification of bhakti. But he did not contain one exclusive literature in which bhakti can be glorified. So that is the reason. So 22nd, 27th verse.
Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself.
So he was nati prasidat hridaya. Again, he was actually completely dissatisfied in heart. Sarasvatya sateshuja, he was sitting in a solitary spot in the Saraswati river. Dharmavit, he was a knower of dharma. What did he do when he was dissatisfied? Vitarkayan viviktastha, he began to contemplate. So many times, yeah, when we are dissatisfied, yeah, we need to consult the superiors. But before consulting the superiors, we also need to do an internal contemplation within ourselves also. Just like when a person is diseased, before meeting a doctor, he need to contemplate within himself as how he is going to present his problem to the doctor. Like, he has to properly report, okay, these were the problems. I went to these doctors. They gave these medicines, but I had still encountered these problems. So he has to contemplate about how he should present the subject matter to the doctor. Then Vyasadeva will approach a spiritual master, but before that, what he is doing is that he is doing self-introspection. He is doing self-contemplation. So you see that Vyasadeva, he had a selfless intention. It is not that he had some selfish intention. And it is not that, although he had a selfless attitude, it is not that he carried out that selfless action in a half-hearted manner. He put his full heart in doing that welfare for the people. But what he did it, that is important. It is not just why we do it and how we do it, but it is also important what we do it. We may have a selfless intention, and we may put our full heart in only doing philanthropic activity. But what is important, what we do it, is that we have to ultimately connect people with Krishna. In one sense, Vyasadeva, this is a classic example of how simply doing philanthropic activity will not satisfy a person. From one point of view, Vyasadeva did some altruistic or philanthropic activity. Because most of the Vedic literatures, he only glorified the path of karma, jnana and yoga. Even if he did glorify bhakti, he did not glorify exclusively or repeatedly. He glorified bhakti only as a means to attain liberation. So therefore, in one sense we can say Vyasadeva did some philanthropic activity. So from that point of view, he was not satisfied. Yeah, Vyasadeva's intention was pure, but the method he adopted was not proper. So Prabhupada writes here, perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. And this satisfaction of heart has to be searched out beyond matter. So you understand that when you do something right activity, there will be individual satisfaction and also real welfare for the people. So how much we understand that whether others are getting benefited, whether others are accepting it. So one way to check is that whether there is an individual satisfaction from within. So that satisfaction is a criteria. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. And it is not simply material satisfaction, it has to be searched beyond the matter. So if we compare Vyasdev versus Dhruva Maharaj. So Vyasdev had a selfless intention and he wanted to do good for all people of all time and all places. But although he did it, he was dissatisfied in heart. But in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he had a selfish intention. He only wanted to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, and he wanted to take revenge against his stepmother. But although he had only a selfish intention, but because he was connected to Krishna, Narada Muni made Dhruva Maharaj perform devotional service. Because he became connected to Krishna, ultimately he became satisfied in heart. Swamin Kritartosmi Varamna Yache. But in the case of Vyasdev, he was dissatisfied because his activities were not properly connected to Krishna. So what is important is that, means like selfless intention without connection to Krishna will lead to dissatisfaction. But selfish attitude with connection to Krishna will ultimately lead to satisfaction and selflessness. When Dhruva Maharaj, when ultimately after getting the darshan of Lord Vishnu, his heart was completely transformed. He no longer had that enmity towards his stepmother. He became completely selfless and he no longer desired that kingdom of Lord Brahma. He became completely satisfied. So therefore, connection to Krishna is most important. And to give a simple example, somebody may have a very costly iPhone 6S. But if it is not connected, if there is no network connection available. On the other hand, somebody has a Nokia 1100. But at least network connection is there. So which is actually better? So no, well, you can communicate with other people. So the connection to Krishna, that is most important. So because, so therefore good intentions without knowing how to do good to the people cannot satisfy oneself. And it can be dangerous for others also. That famous story of Prabhupada, like in Calcutta there was a news that one child had a jaundice. Then he asked his sister that please give me paratha. The mother was not giving the paratha. But the mother was away, the sister gave the paratha. Then after some time, he died. The sister wanted to do good for her. But she did not know how to do good. So because she did not know how to do good, like when we don't know how to do good, ultimately we will not be satisfied and it will also be harmful for others. So therefore, not only good intentions, but we also have to know like whether we are doing the right thing. So therefore, this mananam, this self-introspection is also important. Therefore, it is explained there are four processes or four stages of getting like a realization or four stages of like a progressive path of knowledge. One is Shravanam, hearing, and second is Mananam. That means like we have to contemplate, we have to introspect on what you have heard. And third is nididhyasanam, applying what we hear, applying what we have heard. And fourth is vandanam, offering prayers, or we can say kirtanam also, repeating. So all these four things, Vyasadeva is actually doing the introspection. And another thing we can see, actually Vyasadeva, it is a pastime of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva accepted the pastime of experiencing doubt. After organizing all the Shrutis and composing the Vedanta Sutra and Mahabharata, he felt dissatisfied. So Gopi Parandantru writes a beautiful point. He said, Vyasadeva had spent a long time preaching subjects other than pure devotional service. Like, in order to compile all the Vedas, like Vedas, I heard in one place, like Vedas contain 1 lakh times 1 lakh verses. So he spent a long time compiling or preaching subjects other than pure devotional service. And therefore, like he became dissatisfied. So sometimes he says that even pure devotees of the Lord suffer apparent forgetfulness of his presence and directions while living in this world in the mood of separation from him. So sometimes a fully surrendered devotee thinks that, that means, like, Vyasadeva's mood was that he was too gradual in his approach. Like, he organized all the Vedas for those who are qualified for the path of karma, who should perform the sacrifices, who are not qualified for jnana, yoga and bhakti. He did that. And after that, those who are for the Sri Shudra and Dvijabandhu, he wrote Mahabharata and the Puranas, less intelligent people. But even in that, Mahabharata, there are only 3 sections in the Mahabharata which exclusively glorify devotional service. One is Bhagavad Gita, another is Vishnu Sahasranam, and third is the Narayaniya section, which is part of the Moksha Dharma. Only these 3 sections glorify exclusively pure devotional service. So, and then Vyasadeva wrote Vedanta Sutra also. Vedanta Sutra is the conclusion of the Vedas in Sutra format, but even so, Vedanta Sutra is meant for the intellectual people and Mahabharata is meant for the less intelligent people, non-intellectual people. In one sense, he wanted to be relevant to all kinds of people. He was very much relevant to the less intelligent people and also the intellectual people and those who are not qualified, who are only qualified for karma, those who are interested in this world. For them, he was very much relevant to everyone. But in being relevant to everyone, he somehow missed the connection with Krishna. He was too gradual in his approach. Gopi Parandantru writes that sometimes a fully surrendered devotee thinks that he should first accomplish some business in this world before becoming a full-time preacher of the Lord's glories. So in one sense, Srila Prabhupada was in the mood of Vyasadeva before taking to sannyas. So Srila Prabhupada, his mood was that first I will actually become successful in the business, because there was no second thought in regards to following the order of his spiritual master. But he was always thinking that, oh, how can I establish the mission of Lord Chaitanya unless I have money? So first let me become successful in my business. So he was trying so many times, but every now and then the business was failing. But Prabhupada thought that first I will become a successful businessman and then I will preach. And then I will dedicate fully for the mission of Lord Chaitanya. In that sense, Prabhupada was in the mood of Vyasadeva. So humbly feeling unqualified to to assume the position of a Vaishnava Acharya, a pure devotee makes plans for success as a businessman or as a scholar. Like Vyasadeva, he wrote so many Vedas. Prabhupada wrote, planned for success as a businessman. But because the devotee is sincere, the Lord arranges at the right time for him to be reminded of his higher duty. So Vyasadeva followed this pattern in his transcendental pastimes, busying himself for a long time in teaching the worldly principles of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. But then when he realized that how he was dissatisfied, at that time he was ready to be redirected by his spiritual master. Then Prabhupada's, all his plans one by one failed. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was coming again and again in his dreams. Take sannyas. And then that's why Prabhupada, before taking sannyas, he was in the mood of Vyasadeva. After taking sannyas, after he took to the Vanaprastha Ashram, after he renounced his family life, he was in the mood of Narada Muni. And especially we see Prabhupada's purports are in the mood of Narada Muni. So what was Narada Muni's mood? You will see in the next chapter. So Narada Muni's mood was that, like, do not be too gradual in giving the essence. So Narada Muni told him to immediately glorify, write one literature which will uncompromisingly glorify the Supreme Personality of God. So Narada Muni's mood was that to glorify the Supreme Lord Krishna in uncompromising manner, to present the essence. So Prabhupada, that is why in his purports, he actually, right from the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he gives the conclusion right from the beginning, which comes in the end. So Prabhupada is in the mood of Narada Muni in his books, especially after he renounced. So you see that so there are like two principles in preaching. One principle is that we have to connect to the audience, and second is that after connecting to the audience, we have to give Krishna. So what is the ninth offense of the holy name? To speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless people. So one is that, one part of the offense is to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless. Another aspect of the offense is that not to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithful, which is not usually talked about, but this is also another aspect of the offense. To speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless, another aspect is that not to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithful. So when somebody is completely new, then first you have to make the person faithful. You have to connect with the audience. You cannot immediately speak the glories of the holy name or Srimad Bhagavatam. First you have to connect with the audience. But after connecting with the audience, after a person has developed faith, we should not be too shy in giving the glories of the holy name. We should not be too shy in giving the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. So in that sense, Vyasadeva did the first part. He wanted to connect with all kinds of audience. The intellectual people, non-intellectual people, those who are not qualified for jnana, yoga or bhakti. He wanted to connect with all kinds of people, but after connecting with them, he did not present one literature which will directly glorify the Supreme Personality of God. So therefore, the second part of the preaching, he did not do that, therefore he was dissatisfied. But in the case of Narada Muni, you see, Narada Muni also, in the fourth canto, when he was preaching to Prachina Barishad, he speaks an allegorical story. In order to connect with his audience as a king, he speaks a story which will relate to him. He connected with the Prachina Parishad by speaking that story. But at the same time, if we read 4th canto, 29th chapter, he also uncompromisingly speaks about the process of devotional service at the end. He did not simply connect with the audience, and then after the Prachina Parishad got connected, he became faithful. Narada Muni did not shy away from speaking the real glories. So, but Vyasadeva did not do that, so therefore he was actually dissatisfied in the heart. So, yeah, we will quickly go through the remaining verses. 28 and 29. Dhritavratena himaya chandamsi gura vognaya manita nirvyalikena grihitam chanushasanam. Shrita. Drishyate yatra dharmadi stri shudradi birapyuta tatapi bata me daihyo hyatma chaivatmana vibuhu asampanna yivabati brahma varchasya sattamaha. Can you read the translation?
I have, under the strict disciplinary vows, unpretentionally worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master and altar of sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplinary succession through the explanation of Mahabharata, by which even women, Shudras and others, friends of twice born, can see the path of religion. I am feeling incomplete, though I myself am fully equipped with the everything required by the Vedas.
So you see, like, there are different causes of dissatisfaction. So Vyasadeva is trying to introspect. What are the different causes of dissatisfaction? When a person has not respected the Vedas, when a person has not respected the spiritual master or the fire god, these can be causes of dissatisfaction. So Vyasadeva is thinking that I have respected properly. Chandamsi Gurovo Agnaya. The Vedas, the Guru and the fire god. Dhritavratena. Somebody has not followed this, the regulative principles, or has broken certain vows, then there can be dissatisfaction. But he's saying, I have strictly followed the vows. Nirvyalikena, with great sincerity. And then he's further thinking, 29th and 30th verse, Bharata Vyapadashena. And for the less intelligent people, Sri Shudradbir, I have done, like, sometimes you may feel like, suppose somebody is, you are giving a class and certain people, you have spoken something and certain people were not able to understand, or it became a bouncer for them, or they could not understand, or they get hurt or something. And then when you come to know later, a speaker becomes a little dissatisfied. Maybe I should not have spoken this, or I should explain this better for that particular person. But Vyasadeva is thinking that I have clearly shown the meaning of the Vedas even for the Stri, Shudra and all these people. What to speak of the higher caste? Because I have written the Mahabharata. Bharata Vyapadashena. But still, in spite of that, tatapi means in spite of this, what is happening is that asampanna, I am feeling incomplete. So he says, tatapi batame daihyo hyatma chaivatmana vibuhu. But still, although I am powerful with austerity and knowledge, Vyasadeva was powerful, vibuhu, and daihya means my soul situated in the body. Vibhu means, although I am complete with austerity and knowledge, complete with austerity and knowledge, but still what I am feeling is that asampanna and asattama. I am feeling incomplete, asampanna and asattama. That means, like, I am feeling very inferior. Not only incomplete, I am feeling very inferior. Despite, after doing all these, following all these principles, And although I am actually complete with austerity knowledge, I am feeling like incomplete. So this means that purity is not sufficient. Vyasadeva had purity, but he was not satisfied. So many people in this world, they are very pure. They may be following all the moral principles, regulative principles, everything perfectly, but they will not be satisfied because of not connection to devotional service. That's why Prabhupada says that perfection is never attained unless one is satisfied at heart, and that satisfaction has to be searched out beyond matter. So therefore, it's not that all these principles which Vyasadeva is saying that they are not necessary. It's like following the vows properly, worshipping the, respecting the Vedas, fire god and guru, all these are necessary but not sufficient. Good culture, all these principles are necessary. Good culture, good knowledge, the culture of respect, etc. All these are necessary but not sufficient without bhakti. So just like, for example, the Vyasadeva's feeling was that, like suppose somebody goes to a doctor, he's having like tremendous weakness and tremendous tiredness, he's getting fever and headache and all these problems, and the doctor puts him in different tests, he does all kinds of blood tests, CT scan, MRI, everything is proper. But still he is feeling that, still I am feeling very tired, I know, I am feeling very feverish and I am not feeling any energetic. So something like that Vyasadeva is feeling, that I have performed all these principles perfectly but still I am feeling incomplete and inferior. So this shows that how Vyasadeva is actually introspecting within himself. So this is an important principle. So 30... So we'll just complete the verses and then we'll take them. After this one, we'll take them. Because three verses are there. So Prabhupada explains that purification of living being submerged in matter is made possible by the prescribed duties in the Vedas, but the ultimate achievement is different. So unless it is attained, the living being, even though fully equipoised, cannot be situated in the transcendental normal stage. Transcendental normal stage. So in that sense, like Vyasadeva, it is not that we condemn the other scriptures. Mahabharata, Puranas, they are also important. But the point is that there are different scriptures for different purposes. So Mahabharata and Ramayana, the Itihasas and all these Puranas, they essentially give the vision of how to live in this world. So Mahabharata, Ramayana, they especially talk, like from the point of view of Ram Bhaktas, Ramayana is like a devotional scripture. But in general, Ramayana is also, we can say, it talks mainly about Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But from the point of view of devotees of Lord Ram, it is actually devotional, the pastimes of Lord Ram. So but Mahabharata, Ramayana, all these Puranas, they give actually information about how to live in this world. And in particular, we can say from Ramayana, we can learn how to lead in this world. How to be a leader, what should be the qualities of a leader. But Bhagavatam talks about, teaches us how to love the Supreme Lord. How to leave this world in remembrance of Krishna. So we definitely need knowledge of how to live in this world. But giving only that knowledge of how to live in this world, but not actually educating people how to leave this world in remembrance of Krishna by educating them in Bhagavad Dharma, if you don't give that, then your service is incomplete. So Vyasadeva had performed only this service of how to live in this world, but he did not actually give that point of how to love the Supreme Lord. So therefore, we have to balance while living this world. Most people live the life of a householder. We have to balance all three aspects. It means like living in this world according to the Vedic principles and then leaving this world in remembrance of Krishna and practicing that bhakti throughout our life, and also how to lead our life, how to act like a proper leader while living in this world. So therefore we have to like balance all these things. So 31st verse, you can read the translation, 31st.
This may be because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of Lord, which is dear both to perfect beings and to the infallible Lord.
So Vyasadeva is actually coming to the conclusion also. Maybe I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord. So Prabhupada says that unless one is fixed in the normal condition of service, neither the Lord nor the living being can become fully satisfied. Vyasadeva was the Supreme Lord himself. The incarnation of Vyasadeva is the Krishna himself, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. But unless a person is fixed in the normal condition of service, neither the Lord nor the living being can become fully satisfied. Even the Supreme Lord, Vyasadeva, he was also not satisfied. 32nd verse. Yeah.
Before Narada reached the cottage of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, on the banks of Saraswati, just as Vyasadeva was regretting for his defects.
So the previous word, the word prayena comes. Prayena means, that means like maybe I did not glorify the Supreme Lord abundantly. He did glorify the Supreme Lord. But not prayena, in abundantly, exclusively. Now at this time, when he became dissatisfied, when he became helpless, at that time Narada Muni arrives. So until a person comes to actually this situation, the Lord or the spiritual master will not. And Arjuna became desperate, then Krishna spoke the Gita. When Parishit Maharaj became eager and desperate, that time Sukadeva Goswami arrived. Similarly, when Vyasadeva became desperate, when he became dissatisfied, at that time Narada Muni arrived. So Prabhupada writes here that actually the vacuum felt by Vyasadeva was not due to his lack of knowledge. Although Vyasadeva was an empowered incarnation of divinity, he still felt dissatisfaction because in none of the works were the transcendental activities of the Lord properly explained. And he says that the inspiration was infused by Krishna directly in the heart of Vyasadeva. So therefore, he is mentioning that point that the whole situation was arranged by Krishna in order to manifest Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam, as I mentioned last time also, Srimad Bhagavatam is an eternal scripture. But it had become unmanifest in Dwapar Yuga. In order to again re-manifest. So this pastime was arranged by Krishna. So in order to actually... So that's why we have to see the pastime from a divine perspective and also from a human perspective. From a human perspective, that means we understand the lesson that as long as you are not connected to Krishna, even though one may be having selfless attitude, one may be doing so much of philanthropic activities, one will be still dissatisfied. That is the lesson we learned by seeing from a human perspective. From a divine perspective, we have to understand that Vyasadeva is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. This is a pastime which is actually arranged by the Lord so that the Srimad Bhagavatam could be manifest. Otherwise, we may consider, oh, Vyasadeva is also like an ordinary philanthropist. We mistake an ordinary Vyasadeva to be an ordinary person. So you see that when great souls become bewildered, when common person becomes bewildered, he goes away from Krishna. But when great souls become bewildered, they bring so many common people close to Krishna. So when Vyasadeva became bewildered, when Vyasadeva became dissatisfied, now Srimad Bhagavatam is going to take birth, which will bring so many unlimited people close to Krishna. So that is why in one Padyavali, one Vaishnava poet says that let the bewilderment of Mother Yashoda protect me. And because when you see Mother Yashoda's bewilderment during the Brindabhakshan Leela, by her bewilderment, she is enlightening all of us. Let the bewilderment of Mother Yashoda enlighten us, let it protect us. So by the bewilderment of Vyasadeva, by his dissatisfaction, he is going to bring all the conditioned soul close to Krishna. So 33rd verse. Tam abhijnaya sahasa pratyutta yagatam munihi pujayam asa vidivan naradam surapujitam.
At the auspicious arrival of Sri Narad, Sri Vyasadeva got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him the veneration equal to that of given to Brahmaji, the creator.
So at that time, Narada Muni arrived and Vyasadeva worshipped him just like he would respect Lord Brahma, because Narada Muni received knowledge from Lord Brahma. Again, as I mentioned, Sulnath Radhanath Maharaj explained this point that in a personality cult, you give importance to the person. But we should respect the person. We should not be like, we should respect the person for what he represents. Not simply just because he's maybe charismatic or he sings good tune. No, because he chants Hare Krishna, we respect him. So Prabhupada Maharaj explained this point that Narada Muni, Vyasadeva is actually respected Narada Muni as being a representative of Lord Brahma. So therefore he respected him, because he is representing Lord Brahma, he respected him as if he would respect Lord Brahma. So this is an important point. So we will stop here. Yeah, anybody?
Just one query, that it is mentioned that Vyasadeva has taken the guidance from the spiritual master previously only, then how then he can get deviated because doing this everything? How can I understand this?
Yeah, that's why it is a pastime, the sense how he can become bewildered. That's why it is explained that this pastime was performed so that Srimad Bhagavatam could take birth. Vyasadeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. I think, which point I was? One thing I wanted to say. The inspiration was infused by Krishna directly in the heart of Vyasa. Yeah, listen. He was definitely guided by Narada Muni, but still, because Srimad Bhagavatam has to take birth, this pastime was performed. Yeah, in the sense, yeah, he knew that, like he performed all these activities only under the guidance of Narada Muni, but even that sometimes in doing something, in the passion of doing something, we may actually sometimes miss out the purpose. We may go wrong somewhere. Therefore, that's why we need somebody, an observer who can actually, we need to be open to the feedback of an observer. We may be doing many things in the service only, but in the passion of doing something, in the being caught up in those services, we may actually sometimes go away from the actual purpose. That connection to Krishna may miss. So therefore, we need to actually be open to the feedback of an observer who will tell that, oh, you went wrong here, so you should have done like this. So that humility of Narada Muni, we can see that Narada Muni is still open to actually, although after doing so many things, but still is open to hear from Narada Muni. And we'll see that next tomorrow. ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। इन्फीरियर असंपन्न एंड असत्तम असत्तम कृष्णा चक्रवर्ती को ट्रांसलेट्स एज इन्फीरियर एंड नॉट ओनली फीलिंग इन्फीरियर।
हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा। सो एवरीवन इज रिक्वेस्टेड टू कैरी योर बिलोंगिंग्स, डोंट कीप एनीथिंग ऑन द मैट बिकॉज़ इट विल बी दे आर डूइंग वाइंड अप नाउ।